Welcome once again to Saturday Java with Jason. I am Jason Coffee Man. This is where we meet with guests, drink coffee, and just have a great conversation. Today we have Staff Sergeant Mark. He's been in the service now for 12 years. He is he's Staff Sergeant, a squad leader, infantry instructor, and an intelligence analyst. And many other qualifications that he's dealt with throughout his career. So I'm going to turn the time over to Mark right now, and he can give you a little more info on what he does and what he's about.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Jason. I appreciate it. My name's Mark. I run a company called Baratus Defense. I've been doing that since 2013. We're a security training and consulting company. So we've done contracts, worked with units from the Department of Defense, the Department of Justice. I've done some consulting for Fortune 500 companies. I've probably taught at, maybe about 60 police departments across the country. And then we've trained numerous civilians as well across the country in weapons tactics and tactical firearms, all that kind of good stuff. I've got about 12 years on active duty component and in the National Guard. There was a split in between my time there. I'm in the National Guard, Army National Guard now, but there was a split in that time. And during that time, I finished up college and went to law school. And I was It depends. Different jurisdictions call them different things, and I'm getting them all mixed up, but it's a deputy district attorney. How about that? That'll work. So I did that for about 6 years, and then I left that in 2013 and started my company. So, I worked with a lot of different people doing some cool stuff in the security, infantry, and intelligence world. Got deployed, got to stationed in Europe for a while, got to work with a lot of different multinational forces and a lot of great experiences. So I'm really, really thankful.
All right, now let's go back, because when you were younger, what made you really want to sign up to be in the military? Was it a family member that got you interested, or was it just a lifelong dream, or just a spur of the moment thing?
It was kind of all the above, really. All the above. This was way back before the internet was really what it is today. So I really didn't know what I was getting into. YouTube really wasn't there. So I didn't have any way to research and know what I was signing up for. I just knew I wanted to join my grandfather. My grandfather's World War II vet. My dad was Vietnam era vet. So, and then uncles in different conflicts. And then I started having friends that were older than me that were leaving high school and that were going into the Army. And I don't know, just since I was a kid, that was just something, playing, running around with my dad's camo from his uniforms that he had. I don't know. It just was always there. I didn't know when or what I was going to do. I just knew I was going to sign up. But I graduated high school, and I tried the college thing for a little while, and it just wasn't jiving with me at the time. So I just, one day, I don't know, man, I got a wild hair, ran down to the recruiter, and just said, sign me up, dude. And that's what we did. So much to my mom's dismay. My dad was happy about it, but my mom was freaking out. But that's what mamas do, right?
So how much is boot camp compared to, like, the movies of, like, Full Metal Jacket, Platoon? How much accurate are those movies compared to what you dealt with in boot camp?
Thank goodness nobody's, pulling weapons out of the armory and shooting themselves or doing anything like that. I mean, I think it, for some of the movies that I've watched, particularly like Full Metal Jacket stuff, I would certainly say there, at least when I went, there was a flavor of that as far as the yelling, the physical intensity and the stress of, just being a young kid, a teenager away from home and being in that environment. As far as the violence, I never had a drill sergeant hit me in the face. I never saw anyone do it. I would imagine they would have gotten a lot of trouble for doing something like that. But I do know vets from that era where they do have stories like that. And so taking them at their word, I think there was a time where that that type of environment was probably pretty realistic. But for us, it was more just being scared to death that, you know, your drill sergeant was going to kill you. But in the end, I mean, at least the ones I had, you know, over time, you got the notion these guys actually do care about us. They really do want to, I mean, not in a sentimental way, but they do care about their jobs. They want to turn out a good soldier and prepare us for future conflicts. And you know, especially now that I'm an instructor too, not a drill sergeant, but an instructor, I feel that same way about students that come through our schoolhouse. I've had, it's an honor, but it's also humbling at the same time that I now have soldiers that have come through our schoolhouse that I've taught that have now gone on to deployed to other places around the world. Some of these are in some hostile fire zone or hostile zones. And so, yeah, it's something that you think about. I mean, I want to give these guys everything I can to help equip them to be successful and safe and get back home, you know, to their families.
Now, when you're talking about caring about other people, I mean, they're there to protect you as much as you there to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of one hand washes the other.
Yeah, I mean, you really do. I guess, you know, there is a certain sense of, well, I mean, there is a bonding that takes place when you get into a military environment. You bond, and depending on the severity of the circumstances, the stress and the outward pressure, and it's not just the military. I'd imagine this happens anywhere. When you get people pulled together and there's a some kind of threat or stress, you know, people, we have a saying, right? It's a slang saying, but you've heard people say, hey, time to circle the wagons, right? I mean, you've heard that phrase before. I mean, it's just something that happens. And I think the military is probably one of the more intense places where that would happen, obviously, right? Because you've got deployments and you're going downrange into you know, potentially dangerous areas. So that bonding, and then of course you spend so much time together, right? You've got a shared culture. You've all gone through this boot camp experience. You've gone on to your whatever job you have in the military. So you have, you know, same uniform, pretty much same haircut. You're eating the same food. You're working in this culture. You're sharing kind of the same language too, right? The just like any job or career field, you know, each field kind of has its terms of art and its jargons and its language. You know, language is part of culture, right? So it's a little subculture, but that pulls you together just in and of itself. And so one thing I have loved, and I guess is one reason why I get out, but then I come back in and I can't really stay away from it, is just, you know, my experience has been wherever I've gone and gotten stationed, you know, I roll into some place and here's a group of dudes I don't know, I've never met before. And in a very short time, I mean, these guys are my friends. You know, we hit it off very quickly. We bond very quickly and get tight. And these guys become some of the best friends that you'll ever have in your life, you know? And so that's an intangible experience. It's kind of hard to describe, but I think anybody that's, I think you find that in law enforcement, you know, first responders, I think they have that. There for a while, when I had a break in service, you know, we were talking offline. I went to finish college and went to law school, and I was a deputy prosecutor for a while. And I don't know, as far as the civilian side of the house, as far as jobs I've had, that was probably the closest. I mean, obviously there wasn't a physical component with it, but as far as, you know, a group of people that, you know, you're all in it together, trying to serve your community, trying to make the place you live a better place and protect it, you know, through the legal and law enforcement realm, you know, I experienced that as probably as much as you could in the civilian world, right? But yeah, I don't know, it's kind of all over the place on that, but I hope that makes sense.
Right, and I mean, when you guys talk about brotherhood, that's more or less what it is. Like, you guys are brothers. Firemen are brothers. Police are brothers. Yeah. Like, it's not friends anymore. You guys spent months together. So you guys must have one hell of a camaraderie.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you do. I mean, like I said, it's kind of that shared misery. You know, you have good times, you have low times, whether it's training where you're out in the elements and the weather's bad and you're battling the elements, if it's in a training environment, you know, long nights where you're hungry, you're physically you've exerted yourself, you're sleep deprived or whatever. I mean, that you just can't help but, you know, bond with each other, and you learn all that time together. There's a lot of downtime too, and you learn a lot about each other, and you learn about what's going on at home, and if someone's having problems with their family, you know, you kind of share in that drama, and you're there for them, and you support them, and so yeah, it very much is a family atmosphere, or at least it was for me, and most people that I know that have kind of gone through that. I'm sure you'll find an outlier somewhere who had a terrible experience, and you know, they wanted to get out, but I mean, for me, that was the experience.
Now I want to ask you a really personal question, because you are there fighting. You're not with your family. You're not with your loved ones. That must be difficult as hell to be out on a battlefield or in boot camp, whatever it is, and know that your loved ones are home and you're kind of defending them. Do you compartmentalize that? Or does that always sit in the back of your mind? How does that work out?
Yeah, so my deployments were not, you know, when I was on active duty, that was kind of a pre-9/11. So I went to Bosnia and Croatia, and I was kind of part of that Operation Endeavor, Joint Endeavor type thing. So, I mean, we had some things that happened. We had some firing incidents and stuff like that. I wouldn't call it battle. In my mind, a battlefield. I wouldn't compare my deployment with, like, my buddies that have gone on to Iraq and Afghanistan and everything like that. But so I just want to make sure listeners know I'm not misrepresenting my service. But at the same time, I do understand what you're saying. Those things were there. You do miss home. You do think about your family. And, you know, as far as how people deal with it, I don't know how other people deal with it. I mean, I can't, even in the people that you know, you can't really ever get inside their head. But I mean, I think there's a little bit of that. You have to get your mind off of it. You have to focus on why you're there. You have to focus on the job and the mission that you're given. And you focus on helping each other. And, you know, I don't know what else it is you can do. But I think there's other people that have other type of jobs that experience the same thing. I mean, anybody that has to travel, that's, you know, a business person that's on the road a lot. I know people, you know, just with my company, I travel a lot. I'm going a lot too. And I meet a lot of people on airplanes. And, you know, I've met some dudes and people that they leave the house on Monday and they ain't back home to their family till Friday. They spend the weekend with them and then they're back out on the road again that next Monday. And I mean, I travel a lot, but I don't travel that much. I couldn't do that. You know, that's a feat that's pretty amazing to me, that someone could keep a family together. And I'm sure a lot of times people don't, you know, that takes a toll, but I do know people who have successfully done that. And that's, you know, that's not even being in the military. That's just an amazing dynamic of, you know, someone who is doing the best with what they can. They've got to make a living, and not everybody can make money the same way. You know what I mean? So whether that wouldn't be something I would choose for myself, but maybe for someone else, that might be the only thing they've got, or maybe it's just a temporary thing, but you know, you get the point. But I mean, I would assume that's how that they get through it too. You know, you just focus on the task at hand, you check in with home, make sure everything's all right. And you just try to make sure that when you're back home, at least that's what I do when I am home. I try to be on. I try not to think about other things, which are other things with the business. I try to just be home and dialed into my family. I'm not always successful with that. My kids would tell you that, but I do the best I can with it.
Now, when you do get out and you are told you're no longer full time, you know, you are in reserves now, but when you got, yeah, you know, you notice, was that kind of difficult to leave your brothers in arms and go back home?
Oh, yeah. So when I was on active duty, like, so when I joined up for the Army, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I didn't even know if I was going to like it. But I mean, from back, I mean, from day one in basic training, I mean, I was like, man, this is it. This is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I drank the whole Kool-Aid, all licking the bowl, the whole deal. I was all about it. And so I applied to a commissioning program. It was known by as Green to Gold at the time, where basically you could furlough out of the military, go to college, get your degree, go through ROTC, and then come back in. And anyway, long story short, lots of drama. I had some injuries and some things that happened to me, so I got out. And that was really, really difficult because I didn't really have a plan B. And so by the time I was graduating college, right, that was right before 9/11. So most of my friends then were going off and getting commissioned. And then boom, 9/11 hits, and then they're going to Afghanistan. Then boom, Iraq hits. They're going into Iraq, and I mean, they're on the front, on the tip of the spear, so to say. I mean, I've got dudes that were like rolling into Baghdad, first tanks in, first boots on the ground, rolling in. And I mean, that was very difficult because that was still, those were my dudes, right? That was my family. That was my guys that I were friends that I was close to, and the fact that they were over there and I couldn't be with them, that was, I didn't handle that great emotionally or psychologically. I didn't really process that well. And so anyway, but it is what it is, man. That's what life is. You don't, you just have, you get the cards that you're dealt and you do the best you can with them. So yeah, later on, many, many moons later, I was able to get back in, but you know, most of my friends, they've retired or they're getting ready to retire, and I'm still plugging away. But hey, it works out like it's supposed to.
Do you ever look back and say, why me? Why did I get out and they went in? Like, you ever look at it like, oh, well, they went over there. That should have been me going over there too.
Yeah, but, you know, there's not a lot of benefit in doing that. I mean, I think you should reflect on your past to try to get the lessons learned. But man, if you spend there, you can't live in the past. That's just a dead end road because the past is gone and all you have is right now. And so you have to think about, well, what, all right, there's things that I wanted to do, things that I wanted to be part of, and I can't. I missed it. It's gone. The ship sailed and there's nothing I can do about it. And so there's no benefit in me just living in that space. And so, yeah, I mean, there's been times, and even still every once in a while, I mean, I'll find myself there, but I try to get out of that pretty quick and just kind of get in the now, thinking about where I'm at, enjoying the things that have happened as a result of it, because I had a lot of good things happen in my life too, but I chose to make those things happen. And I focused on the present and planning for the future on, you know, what do I want my life to look like? And the impact I want to make around those around me. And that's really, what else can you do, right?
I kind of like that because there's a lot of people out there that might be in that same boat where they're looking back saying, oh, well, I should have done this. I should have been doing that. And yeah, that ship sailed. What do you say mainly to those people that are dealing with the aspects of things we don't know, the PTSD, the flashbacks, all that stuff? I mean, that must be hell on them too.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that, I mean, I don't know. I don't have that kind of experience. You know, I didn't have that, luckily. So I don't know what, I mean, I have friends that are dealing with that, and there's not, I don't have advice for them on that. I mean, all I can do is just be their friend, and when they need me, I'm there for them, and that's all I can do.
Sometimes, you know, that's, I mean, all, sometimes that's all they need though too.
Yeah, I think so. But as far as, you know, what could have been, I find people that'll, you know, they come to our classes or whatever, and they, some of them are veterans, some of them are law enforcement, some of them haven't done either of those, and they wanted to, but for whatever reason, life, they took a different path. And now you can always second guess yourself. I think that's part of human nature, right? I mean, you experience what you've experienced, and it's like you've been there, you've done that, and then you always kind of wonder, well, I wonder what would have been behind door number two, if I would have gone behind door number two, what would that have been like? Oh man, I wish, you know, it's real easy to get wrapped up in these romantic notions of, oh man, that could have been a whole new life. Well, that's true, but there's things that happened that you would have missed out too on, you know, and it doesn't matter what path you take. You're always going to have that, well, what could have been if I would have went by? You can't go through two doors at the same time. You know what I mean? You're going to pick one horse and you ride it. You know, you can't ride two horses at the same time. So you got to pick one and you just do the best you can with it. Right. I mean, I had a commander who kind of, when I was in Germany and he was trying to help me get my packet together. I mean, he was an enlisted guy first. And then he was doing the same thing I was trying, or he had done the same thing I was trying to do. He did a green to gold packet and got commissioned. But before that, you know, he'd gone through Ranger school. He'd went through special forces. He was at 18 Delta medic. And then he got commissioned and became an officer and my company commander. And he and I were talking. I mean, here, this guy did all kinds of stuff. And he was just telling me about regrets he had. He was like, yeah, man, I really wish I would have gone out for Delta Force. I had a chance to try out and I didn't, and that's bugged me. And I mean, here's a guy that's got a resume that's just so amazing, and he's done so much, and he still had a lot to do, but he was looking over his shoulder saying, yeah, man, I really wish I would have done that. So, you know, I think everybody deals with that. But again, it all comes down to, all right, got it, I understand, but what am I doing right now? What am I doing right now with what I have available to me? Am I making the most out of my life? Am I growing as a person? Am I becoming more than what I was? You know, am I evolving? And as long as you're doing that, you're probably living right, I would think. You know, I think it's when you just stop and you're sitting on the couch and you're just consuming things and you're becoming a spectator of life rather than a creator of it. I think that's the greatest tragedy, I think.
Now, after your service, I know you went on to law school and mm-hmm. you became assistant a district attorney. That must be one hell of a change from being in boot camp and stuff like that. It must be.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how do you go from being a serviceman to being a district attorney or assistant district attorney?
Well, I can tell you, I mean, I'm proof, like, if I get through law school, anybody can. I mean, I think they've lowered the bar, so to say, you know, they'll let anybody in, but you can do it. But yeah, it's a different job. It's a different culture. And you just become acclimated to a different culture, a different job. But it was exciting. I mean, I'm glad I did. I have a lot of great memories, a lot of great friends. I had a good impact on my community. I know while I was there, we were making a difference. I could see it in the newspaper. Back then, we hadn't, you know, people were looking more at newspapers and stuff. But yeah, so I don't know if that answered your question, but yeah, it was different. You know, but it was just kind of the same principles, man. You get in there, you study, you work hard, you apply yourself, and you just try to do the best that you can, right? And you grow as a person, and you try to help and make an impact on the people that are around you. Yeah, I mean, I started my business. I was having a good career as a prosecutor, but the one thing that started bugging me was the fact that, well, number one, I mean, in my heart, I'd always been a soldier. That's really all I wanted to do. And so law school was kind of like a plan B. I had a number of jury trials, and it was a great experience working there, but I kind of kept butting up against the fact that I could not get involved into a case until after the fact. Like, someone had to get shot, someone had to die, someone had to get their home broke into, you know, all these things. It was after the tragedy occurred before I got involved. And by then, you know, we're just trying to find the person and apprehend them and build a case and punish them. You know, that's where I was involved. And so I would have victims that were in my office that, you know, maybe the perpetrator was still at large. They were scared to testify at trial. They were like, what can I do? I'm scared of this guy, or he's harassing me, but I can't prove it. I know he is. What am I supposed to do? And, you know, there's just nothing that I could tell them to do. You know, I mean, we would advise them to get an order of protection, but, I mean, give me a break. That's just a piece of paper, right? That, I mean, it has no power. Again, it's if they violate it. That's when the sanctions came. But unfortunately, by them violating it, they could kill the victim, you know, and that's happened before. And so I just didn't like the fact that I could say, hey, go learn some self-defense, purchase a gun, get trained, learn how to wield it safely. I mean, but again, there's nothing I could do to help them. And so if that was one of the driving factors in starting this business was to help really kind of empower people with the knowledge, with the tools and the techniques to become more self-reliant, more self-resilient, to become stronger, faster, harder to kill, that kind of stuff. And yeah, and as I've been doing that for about 10 years and meeting people across the country, one of the byproducts of seeing people evolve, seeing people grow, seeing people acquire these new skills and the level of confidence and watching them grow as a person, that's what the business is about. I mean, the firearms and weapons tactics, that's just the medium that we use. But ultimately, it's about becoming a stronger, more self-reliant, confident person in your developed skills, right? And that's what I love about what I do now, more than anything. And then the other thing that's really cool is, you know, you go to these places, and I have certain venues that I go to every year, sometimes more than once a year. And you see some of the same people, they come back again. And some people that come back make friends with people who are in the class that they didn't know before. And then when you come back and visit them again, and you know, you may go to Kansas or may go to Pennsylvania or someplace, and pretty soon those people that met each other at your classes are now hanging out, they're going to shoot together, and they're becoming involved in people's lives. And that's super cool, man. I mean, that's probably one of the coolest things about that. This gig is being able to put that together, you know, in an indirect way. But
that's really awesome. So what if people want to get in touch with you, are you on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn?
Oh yeah, we do all that stuff. I mean, the best way to find me is the website. So the website is www.BarrettusDefense. It's BARRITUS defense.com. That's the website. And then we also run a podcast. Me and my business partner, who was in Ranger Battalion, he's got a stellar, killer resume, and super good dude. One of my best friends in the world. But we run a podcast called Pearl Snap Tactical Podcast. So you can find that on Apple and Spotify, wherever you listen to, we're on all the platforms. So yeah, link up with us there. But if you really want to find everything we're doing as far as our schedule, where we're going to be at and everything, the websites, that's the place to go.
All right, well, I want to thank you for your time. Again, this has been Staff Sergeant Mark. And like I said, he's been in there for 12 years in the Army. So everybody take your hats off to him and all the other veterans that are out there, past, present, and the future. So I want to thank you for your time, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. I really enjoyed it.
I'm always looking for likes, shares, and reviews. Please give it a share and a review. 5 stars really does. Thanks for tuning in. Yes, refill both of our coffees. See you next week, where we can listen once again. Please follow us on Saturday Java with Jason on Facebook and Instagram. And please follow me on Facebook at Jason Coffee Man.